Ryan, did you clean the benches over on this side? Let me see, sheep and goats. Those on his right hand. It's great to see all of you here. This looks kind of funny. We've got most everybody over here on this side and not very many over here on this side. But wherever you are seated this morning, we're glad to have you here with us this morning, especially our visitors. We have been studying the gods at war. And this morning, lesson number 6, we're going to be talking about the temple of pleasure. Now, where we have been thus far in our study, we've talked about the fact that there are various gods that are warring for the throne of our heart. They're doing everything they can to be able to take the place of God on the throne of our heart. And what we're trying to do is, first of all, to identify what those gods are, who they are, so that we can dethrone them, get them off of the throne of our heart, and make sure that God, the true God, is the only one that is sitting on the throne of our heart. Now, last week in our study, we looked at, we were talking about the challenge that Joshua gave to the Israelite people just before he died, and what he did was laid out a choice for them. He said, you need to decide. If worshiping God is seems evil to you, he says, then you decide, you choose whom you will worship. You see? And so we talked about the importance of us choosing, the fact that we all worship something. We've got to choose who we're going to worship. Now, this morning, we're going to be talking about going into the temple. And what we realize is that there are a lot of different temples. And we're going to talk about the tale of three temples, first of all. The fact that there are a variety of temples, you see, that the gods call us into to worship them. Okay? And these are the places that we go to worship these gods that are trying to draw us away from the real, true Jehovah God. Now, these temples are not necessarily physical structures that we will go into, but they are temples nonetheless. You see? They're not the physical buildings. Like, you know, we have a building here. But we gather together and use this building to worship the one true God. But what we have to understand is that there are temples that these gods draw us to. Again, not physical structures, but they're temples nonetheless. And what we're going to be doing over the next several weeks is talking about these different temples that the gods draw us into. There are three big ones that we're going to be focusing on through the remainder of our study on the gods at war. The first one is the gods, or the temple rather, of pleasure. That's what we're going to focus on this morning. Okay, the temple of pleasure. The second one is the temple of power. There are a lot of folks that are focused on power. Power means everything to a lot of people. In fact, you can go through and look at magazines and articles all over the place that list the 50 most powerful, the 10 most powerful in this, the 100 most powerful people. We are a nation that is consumed with power, and there is a temple. You see, a temple that is dedicated to power. So we'll look at that. And then there is the temple of love. And we'll talk about that particular temple as well. So what we need to understand is, we look at this temple this morning that we're going to talk about, the temple of pleasure. Okay? And as we begin this, I want you to realize that if you think about it for a moment, we are people, especially in our culture here in America, we are a people who are dedicated to the pursuit of pleasure. We are pleasure seekers, you see? And for a lot of people, that's what we live for, is pleasure. Okay? We drive down the road of life looking for whatever fun might be ahead of us, whatever is there for us to enjoy in life. And that's what we do, is go from one fun thing to the next thing. More and more what's happening is that our lives revolve. They revolve around those things that bring us pleasure and joy and happiness. See, and that's what life for a lot of people is really all about. It's going from one fun thing to the next. The pursuit of pleasure is the main goal, really, of most people, including ourselves. Okay? Yeah. It really is. Now, I'm not talking about just the opportunities that we have in life to have fun. Okay? There's nothing wrong with having fun. There's nothing wrong with pleasure and joy. God wants us to have joy in our lives. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the gods that call us into the temples of pleasure, you see, as our goal and pursuit in life. So we drive down this road, and we turn this way, and we turn that way. Whatever direction that the signs are telling us will lead us to happiness and pleasure and joy, because that's what we are pursuing. Okay? In other words, if it isn't fun, then we're not interested. You know how difficult it is for teachers to keep the attention of their students in their classrooms? You see, because they're no longer content to just sit and read lessons out of books. They've got to be entertained, and the lessons have to be fun, or they're not interested. You see? You ever sit and tell your child, why don't you go outside and play in the fresh air? It's nice outside. And what do they say to you? That's boring. And what do they want to do? They want to play with the games, the video games, and whatever, because that's more fun. You see? And so our lives, in a lot of ways, revolve around what is fun. If it's boring, we're just simply not interested. We spend, in America, trillions, literally trillions of dollars every year trying to find ways to make ourselves happy. See? It is the pursuit of happiness. And it comes in a lot of different forms, like food, for instance. Food is one of those areas that brings us joy and happiness, doesn't it? In fact, most of us today, when we leave here after worshiping God, we're going to go to some other temple, okay, so that we can enjoy the pleasure of stuffing our faces with food. In fact, some of you will be watching your watches to see when is he going to shut up so we can get out of here and meet the Baptist to the restaurant so we don't have to stand in line all day, right? Yeah, okay. You see? Tell me that food is not a god to us. Okay? Well, we're going to talk more about that next week. But you see, then there's the whole issue of sex. You see, is one of those gods that are in the temple of pleasure that draws people to that. You see, travel. You know, we look at the promises that we see on TV of all the joy that you will experience if you'll just take this exotic vacation, you see, and so forth. And so we look for the pleasure and the happiness that those kinds of things bring. And how about that great big screen TV, you see? The entertainment that the world is telling us we have to have, that it draws us in to sit in front of that God that is in our living room, hanging on the wall, or sitting on the table, or wherever it is, that we bow down and worship entertainment in our lives. Interesting thing, the World Happiness Survey. Anybody ever heard of this before? The World Happiness Survey, okay? And so, you know, what they've done is they've gone throughout the world, nations all over the world, to try to find out who are the happiest people in the world, okay? And the result of this survey, you know what the happiest nation in the world is? Anybody want to guess? Not really too sure. Charles, what do you think? China? No.
America.
No, not America. The happiest nation in the world, according to the survey, is Bangladesh. Yeah, one of the poorest nations in the world. The people there are the happiest. You see? Now, the U.S., which is one of the wealthiest nations in the world, we have more at our disposal to find happiness than perhaps anybody else in the whole world does. You know where we rank? 46. Yeah, 46. behind countries like India and Ghana and Croatia and Latvia. You see, we are very unhappy people. Though we keep chasing happiness all the time. With all that we have at our disposal, all the means that we have to find happiness and pleasure in our lives, we're still not very happy. Something is wrong here, isn't there? You see? The reason I think that we're not very happy is because of what's referred to as the law of diminishing returns. Okay? And the law of diminishing returns basically has to do with the idea that the more we get, the more we need to satisfy it. So here's part of it. When something good, and keep in mind that as we go through this study, that's what we're talking about, is things that are good. But when something good becomes a god, the pursuit of it, you say, of that particular thing, the pleasure that it's supposed to bring, dies. And it no longer brings the pleasure that we were looking for, but the result is unhappiness. See? And what happens is the more that we intensely chase or pursue those things, the more it eludes us. It's like the old proverbial dog chasing its tail. You're never going to catch it. See? And we keep chasing it and chasing it and chasing it. I've got to have this, I've got to have that to have more pleasure, more happiness in life. If I could just have this, then. And it keeps on eluding us all the time. The more pleasure we experience, the more we want. Okay? More thrill, more excitement, more. Never having enough. And so we keep on pursuing, hoping that somewhere along the line, somewhere along the road, we'll find that pleasure and that happiness that will truly last. And what happens is we walk into the temple of pleasure. You see? We go inside there looking for that happiness. Okay? Yeah, I went into one of those temples the other day. It's a brand new temple. It was just built over on the Lothian Turnpike. It's Krispy Kreme donut. Yeah. And you laugh about it, but I'm here to tell you, for me, that's a struggle. Okay? Because let me tell you how this all went down. You know, my wife told me back a couple months ago, they're building a new Krispy Kreme donuts over there right by work. I went, that's bad. You say, that's bad. But it's good. And so, a week or so ago, I went over and had lunch with Cindy, and after lunch, I thought, well, you know, I need some dessert. And so, I decided to stop by the Krispy. I didn't just decide to stop, I planned it. I planned to go by the Krispy Kreme donut place. The line had gotten down, you know, somewhat. I wasn't the only one worshiping. That place had cars wrapped around the building, you see. They had policemen out there directing traffic. There were so many people worshiping at this temple. Okay? And so on this day, I decided and I planned and I went to the temple. And on my way there, I decided I'm just going to go in and get a couple of donuts. My two favorites. A nice hot Krispy Kreme glazed donut and then one with the cream fill. You know how good. I was just going to get two. And then I got in there and I thought, well, I can't get two for me and not get any for Cindy. So now I'm up to four. You see, because I've got to draw her into my temptation. And so I got in there and I went up to the altar / counter. And I didn't just order two and I didn't just order four. I ordered a half dozen. Because that makes sense, right? Nobody just orders four donuts. See? And then I decided, well, I can't let Cindy know that I actually ordered six. You see? So I had to eat two of them. Yeah. See? funny, but I'm here to tell you that's a struggle for me. You say, is there anything wrong with Krispy Kreme donuts? Not that I know of. Not in the flavor and all that stuff. But you see, if I'm not careful, you see where that can go. I have a problem with food. I'm telling you that this morning. I have a problem with food. And I got drawn into that temple that day to worship the God that was calling me. Because I was feeling at that time that if I could just have a couple of Krispy Kreme donuts, which I haven't had in a long time, I sure would feel good. And maybe your problem is not Krispy Kreme donuts, but maybe it's that cruise that you just are longing to have. And if I could just go on a cruise, then boy, my life would be fulfilled. And maybe it's not the cruise. Maybe it's that you're waiting to get enough money in the bank so you can go buy that new 75 or 80 inch flat screen TV so you can watch the game in all of its glory in that high definition and feel like you're actually there in the stadium. And maybe it's that boyfriend or girlfriend that you just got to have that's really, you know, the relationship is such that you're feeling like, you know, if we could just have sex, then I know that we would feel so much better about the relationship and I'd find so much more happiness in this relationship if we could just take that one more step. Or maybe it's the idea of saying, hey, you know, if I could just get out of this crummy marriage that I'm in, then I'd be happy because I no longer have to put up with this other person. You see how the gods of pleasure just draw us in with these kinds of things. And they call for us. And we go to the temple of pleasure. We offer our money and our time and sometimes our integrity. We lay it on the altar. Because we're seeking to have this pleasure. Knowing in our heart that that's what's going to really bring me happiness. The problem is that we realize too late that the promise is nothing but a lie. And all it really does is bring us pain, not the happiness that we were seeking. The gods in the temple of pleasure promise us all kinds of things. But they don't keep their promises. They just don't keep their promises. Do they? You know, because you've been there. Just like I have. Great promises. There are three main gods that we're going to be focusing on over the next 3 weeks in the Temple of Pleasure. We're going to look at each one of these gods, one each week. We're going to start off with looking at the gods of food. Okay? And we're going to talk about the gods of sex and sexuality. And then we're going to talk about the gods of entertainment. Now, these are not the only gods that are in the Temple of Pleasure, but these are the three that seem to be the most active and the ones that seem to chase us the most. You see? And so we're going to focus on these three gods in the Temple of Pleasure over the next 3 weeks. These things that I just mentioned to you are not bad in and of themselves, are they? Nothing wrong with any of those things. In fact, we have to eat, right? You know? And God has given us sexuality for married people as a gift. They're all gifts from God. And don't think for a minute that God didn't, as a gift to us, give us a gift of entertainment. Music? Where do you think your voice came from? Where do you think the whole concept of musical notes and tones and all that comes from? It all comes from God. So they're all gifts, aren't they? So why are they such a problem to us? You see, the thing is that the gift that is given should draw us closer to the giver. That's part of the idea of the gift, isn't it? But too often, the gifts that God gives to us, they end up being God's greatest competition. And who then ends up winning for the place on the throne of our heart? It becomes a competition in a lot of ways. Inside the temple of pleasure, those gifts then, in other words, become gods. We find ourselves bowing down and worshiping those gods. Okay. Then what we find as a result of that is that God withholds His gifts from us. I want you to think about this with me for a moment, okay? Go with me to the story of Ahab and the text that was read to us as we began this morning. Ahab becomes the king of the northern kingdom of Israel, the time when the kingdom is divided, northern kingdom, southern kingdom. Ahab becomes the king of the northern kingdom. And he marries a woman named Jezebel. Okay? So Ahab and Jezebel get together and they're running this kingdom. And how are they doing that, you see? Well, take a look at the name of Jezebel. And you begin to understand why things went so bad when you understand the definition of her name. If you go to a dictionary and you look up Jezebel in the dictionary, here's what you will find, this definition. Jezebel, a noun. A shameless or immoral woman. Okay, the origin of that word is that it is the name of the wife of King Ahab of the Bible. That's the definition in the Bible that you will find of Jezebel. What does that tell you about this woman? You say, how evil and wicked she really was. Now, 1 Kings chapter 16, verses 31 through 33. Speaking of Ahab, it says, Ahab began to serve Baal and worship him. And he set up an altar for Baal in the temple of Baal that he had built in Samaria. Okay? So Ahab follows his wife and he starts worshiping the Baals. And sets up an altar to him and he built a temple to him. You see? And Ahab also made an Asherah pole. And did more to provoke the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger than did all of the kings of Israel before him. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a pretty bad guy. Okay? So that's the situation. Ahab, the king, is leading the people in the wrong direction, worshiping other gods. The Lord sends the prophet Elijah. Elijah the Tishbite comes to Ahab and he says to him, as the Lord, the God of Israel lives, whom I serve, there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years except at my word. Now, let me ask you to think about this moment. Why is that such a big deal? Why this idea of God sending the prophet to Ahab and saying, hey, look, there's going to be a drought. There's not going to be any rain until I say so for the next few years. Why is that such a big deal? Because Baal was the god of fertility and the lord of the rain clouds. That's right. Yeah. And what was happening is that Ahab and the rest of the Israelites had set up a competition. In other words, they had put other gods and given credit to other gods, like we were talking about in our Bible class this morning. They had other gods who were giving credit to other gods for what God had been doing for them. And so what God did, what did he decide to do? Fine, I'll show them. They think Baal's the one that gives them rain. I'll withhold the rain and see how they like that. So God withheld the blessing of the rain from the land. Okay? God uses a drought to get the attention of his unfaithful people. Think about that a moment, okay? Think about your own life. You see, God withholds his blessings a lot of times in areas in which we turn to false gods. So in other words, think about it this way. A drought of financial means in the midst of our obsession with money, is that perhaps a problem? In other words, if you look at your financial situation and say, well, if I could just win that lottery, then all my financial problems would be gone. And you wonder why you have one month at the end of your month and you're always having financial problems. You say, is it maybe because you have set up competition, another God, in the place of Jehovah? Or maybe it's a drought of health due to our obsession with food and displayed by the things like junk food and obesity and diet crazes and all of those kinds of things. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not suggesting that every health problem we have has to do with us having some other God. That's not the point. The point is that some of them are. I'm here to tell you this morning, I'm overweight, I have high blood pressure, and it's due to the fact that I go to the altar of the gods of food. That's my fault. See? Is God withholding His blessing from me for better health because I'm taking those blessings and giving credit to other gods? I go to food for comfort and all of those things. And we'll talk more about that next week, but you see what I'm saying? Drought of sexual satisfaction in our marriage relationship. Maybe, perhaps, because of the obsession that we have in this world that's full of pornography and homosexuality and adultery and fornication and all of those things that we so easily can find ourselves absorbed into because the gods are calling. Why should God bless us when we let other gods compete with Him in these areas of our lives? That's an important question for you to think about. Why should He give us His blessings when we give credit to other gods for the blessings He gives us? Okay. We set up those competitions, just like in Ahab's day, and Elijah went there. And he challenged the gods of the people. And in this challenge, what he had done was he said, okay, you think that Baal is God? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to build an altar. And each of us will sacrifice a bull on it. And you, the 450 prophets of Baal, you set up your altar, but don't light the fire on it. And you call upon your God to light the fire on that. And so they did. They set up the altar and they cut up the bull and they put the pieces on the altar and they danced around the altar calling upon Baal to answer their call and to light the fire on the sacrifice. And they kept on doing this until noon and no response. And the Bible says they heard nothing. And Elijah started taunting them. He's saying, you know, maybe you need to shout louder because maybe he's busy. Maybe he's asleep. You need to wake him up, you say. And so they shouted louder and they started cutting themselves in spiritual ritual to cut themselves. And they shouted louder and nothing was happening. And finally came the evening time and Elijah says, okay, he set up his altar and he took stones from the altar that had been torn down, 12 stones representing the 12 tribes of Israel. He built an altar and he put his sacrifice on the altar. And he told them, he said, take some buckets of water and pour it on the sacrifice and on the altar as well. And he had dug a trench around it. He poured the water on top of it, so they did. He said, pour it on there again. So they poured more on there. He said, do it a third time. They poured more on there. And then Elijah prayed, and God sent down the fire, and He consumed not only the sacrifice, but the altar, and sucked up the water also. Okay. If you're having a drought in these different areas of your life, perhaps it's because these things have become a god to you. And you need to understand that they're counterfeit gods. They're not real. They're just like the gods of Baal and the sheep. They can't do anything. They do nothing good for us. But only bad comes as a result of us chasing after them. God is not going to bless you in your life, in the areas of your life where you have replaced Him with some other god on the throne of your heart. He's not going to do that. See? Elijah issued a challenge to the Israelite people. We were just talking about that a moment ago. But he says to them, 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 21, "How long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow Him. But if Baal is God, follow him." But the people said nothing. Now, that's interesting. Okay? It's interesting to me. Last week, as I said, we were talking about the challenge that Joshua gave to the people, and the response of the people then was that they said, "We will follow the Lord." Remember how we did that? And you guys took that challenge, and you did the same thing, right? Well, here the people said nothing, the Bible says. They didn't respond. Could it be that the reason they said nothing is because they wanted to have the best of both worlds? They wanted to have the blessings that Jehovah God would give them, but then also they wanted to make sure, just in case, that they were going to get the blessings that Baal promised. And so they said nothing. Absolutely nothing. Jesus says no man can serve two masters. The result is going to be this. He's either going to hate one and love the other, or he's going to be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and, in this case, money. You can't serve two masters. You have to decide, like we talked about last week. Stay away from the temple of pleasure. I think this is true. The trouble with trouble is, it starts out with so much fun. And how many times have you chased after something because it was going to be fun, only to find yourself in a great big mess? That's what the temple of pleasure will do. That's what it will do for us. I don't know about you. Now, I hope that you have been thinking about some of these things that I've been sharing with you. I don't know what your response has been, but I know for me personally, this has been a challenge. Because I've had to really look at some of the gods that have been taking up space on the throne of my heart. And so as I share these things with you, I'm sharing them, not only confessing the struggles that I have with these things, but hoping that you will see, perhaps in your own life, how some of these things are struggles that you're facing, and that together we can work at getting rid of these gods off of the throne of our hearts. We're going to stand together in a moment and sing a song. And it's an opportunity for us. It's a song of encouragement for us to be able to use. And we call it an invitation song. It's a song of encouragement to be able to, for anyone, to be able to say, "Hey, I'm struggling with this. I need some help. I need prayers. I need forgiveness. I need guidance. I need whatever it is that you need." But we can't help if we don't know what's going on, what the need is. So we offer this opportunity. It's also an opportunity for anyone who's not yet a Christian. If you haven't been given your life to Christ, and you realize that your sins are still separating you from God, and they will continue to do that. until you get rid of them. And the way you do that is if you acknowledge and confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, and you ask Him to forgive you of those sins, and you have those sins washed away in the waters of baptism, and you can do that right now, this morning. So you can go out of here clean and fresh. I'll be up here in the front to receive anyone that would like to come up front, and Ted will be in the back if you'd like to have a private prayer or conversation with him. But we're here to help anyone in any way that we can. Let's stand together.